That was the late, great Levi Stubbs and the Four Tops with Standing in the Shadows of Love. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, the grassroots talk show that is on a new mission to make America think again. We hope our show will shine a light on the issues that are changing our lives and changing America's course for the future. I'm your host, recently retired United States Senator Michael D. Brown. I've been in the shadows for the past 18 years, but now I'm stepping into the light. Together with my brilliant co-host, Liberty Jones, we want to start a dialogue with America about the truth, because it's what happens in the shadows that changes the world. We're not going to tell you how to feel or who to vote for. We're just going to bring forth the experts who have been there and can give you the information you need to make educated decisions, because a vote is a terrible thing to waste. Today, we're lucky enough to have Patrick Mera, former chairman of the Republican Party in the District of Columbia, school board member, great guy. I could go on and on and on about him, but we only have a limited amount of time. So let's talk about these issues because they're important. Patrick, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Can you tell us to begin with what it was like in Miami when you were at the national meeting of the Republican National Committee?
Yeah, so we had our winter meeting around the inauguration, but we had what's called the spring training meeting down in Miami at the Trump Doral. And the spring training meeting really is, there's no business. It's not a business meeting. It's typically for RNC members only. So the three members from each state, the territories and the District of Columbia. And it is what it sounds like. It is training. And so it basically is training with what the RNC does, elections. Frankly, since it's my fifth year on the RNC, it's probably not as much as needed as a refresher as for the new people. But it was nice to meet the new people as well. Probably we're coming up on like half of the RNC is new from a year ago.
And what are the new people, what's the mood? I mean, what exactly is the training saying? Are you guys stand firmly behind the president?
Well, so it's the Republican Party and the president's the leader of our party. And so it's, in this particular meeting, it was just talking about the mechanics of elections, media, digital, political, and election integrity. And so there were a lot of speakers, panelists, and Q&A with the standard kind of receptions at night in talking with people. I mean, honestly, we didn't really get into politics too much at night. But if you talk to most RNC members, most RNC members support decreasing the size of the federal government. They support a secure border, and you really don't hear too much disagreement, if any disagreement at this point. When we go into our summer meeting, that's when resolutions may or may not come up again. That's when it might get a little more political. And
Liberty,
the summer meeting's in August in Atlanta.
Liberty, what do you have to say?
Well, that's very interesting to me to see how much, these meetings change with different people in office. My question to you is, you've had a lot of experience at these RNC meetings, and do you feel like a sense of people having more agreement, do you feel like the tone of these meetings have shifted? Like, was media always a conversation that you guys tended to gravitate towards? Or do you feel like Trump is bringing in new initiatives and party lines for the Republican branch?
Sure. Well, I mean, look, there there has been a shift. I mean, one of the big things is if you look at the Republican platform at the convention, you know, for example, and this obviously on the Democrat side would be controversial, but on the Republican side also could be considered controversial. You know, he made, for example, abortion a state decision, which on the Democratic side is would be like a nightmare. But on the Republican side, that's the more the less conservative position, so to speak. And then he all but removed basically any negative language, LGBT language. And so if you look at the focuses of the party now, you know, he is, right, arguably, he does not like war, as we've, as he seems to say over and over again. He, you know, he opposed the Iraq war, you know, for example. He wants to get it, he wants to, and obviously, you know, we see different ways this is dealt with in the media, but he wants to get the U.S. and he wants to end the war in Ukraine, and he wants the U.S. to play a much more limited role in that as we get end the war, any kind of a war in Ukraine. You know, so this is a, it's different from it's been in the past, for sure. But, you know, obviously there's still, you know, if you look at something like Doge, you know, Republicans have been talking about decreasing the size of government since before I was alive. And as it turns out, Donald Trump is the first one to actually attempt to do that. So it's kind of an interest, you know, kind of an interesting dynamic, to say the least.
Well, you know what, Patrick? Unfortunately, that's not true. I mean, it's true that it's been going on since before you were born, but Eisenhower tried it. Reagan tried it. None of them were good at it. And neither is Trump, really, right? Our deficit is going to go up under this new big bill. What do the Republicans think of the new big bill? There was no talk of that. How that's going to, because, you know, Patrick, you're a, in my opinion, a liberal Republican. I've always had great respect for you. But let's face it, this guy's not doing anything to end the war in Ukraine. He's not doing anything to end the war in Gaza. They're only getting worse. And he promised to end both of them on the first day. So doesn't this bother the Republicans? Aren't they saying, look, we're looking bad? That's not the feeling.
I think, you know, one thing that I think most people can agree with is that Donald Trump tends to say things a little more in a little more extreme tone than he eventually follows through with. And that's been a, you know, that's been a kind of a continuing, I guess you could say, a negotiating tactic that he uses. And so in this case, he is, you know, I actually do believe, even after the way that, even the way that you kind of lined me up as a less conservative Republican, I do believe that he probably will end the war in Ukraine by the end of his term. They have, you know, they have an open line of communication, and I do think that will be a thing. With regard to Israel, I mean, that's a little more complicated. As you know, I mean, a lot of Republicans kind of see October 7th as the, this will be controversial on your show, but they kind of see October 7th as the Israeli September 11th. And so while I think, you know, specifically if you look at his recent visit to Saudi Arabia and the Middle East generally, I do think he will work towards ending the war in Gaza, but I think he will look to, you know, kind of partners in the Middle East to help with that. And you saw that kind of earlier on in the administration when, for instance, King Hussein of Jordan agreed to take, you know, a million, you know, something like a million refugees from Gaza. I mean, that's huge. So, but I think, you know, you can't, we're only 5 months in, you know, so you can't solve everything 5 months in. I think we all kind of agree on that.
Well, before I let Liberty ask another question, let me ask you, what has he solved? What has he solved other than closing down the border? I mean, he
Well, I
really
think
hasn't solved anything, Patrick. He look, I'm not. I don't want to start a fight with you because you're my guest, and I have
yeah,
great
no, I'm
respect
not
for
gonna
you.
fight.
But the man has gone bankrupt 6 times. What makes anybody in their right mind think that he can run the most complicated government in the world? He's failing consistently over and over again, Patrick. We don't.
Look,
The Republicans don't see that, huh?
no, and he did, but to his credit, he did close down the border. To his credit, when we look at the big beautiful bill, he does, the tax credits are a thing, and if those don't go through, then the middle class will have a tax increase. So that's also a obviously something to keep an eye on as it heads over to the Senate side. But I'd say the border is probably at this point is his biggest success. But again, we're only 5 months in.
Yeah. Liberty. Well, let me tell you, tariffs are a tax on everybody. So the tax break really doesn't help most people, in my humble opinion. Liberty, do you have a question?
Yeah, so you mentioned that Trump, he has had some successes. I will give you that. In the Republican eyes, I feel like he has achieved some of the great extreme things he has put out there. Even though I don't know how successful those things were, he did achieve them. But my question to you is, I feel like he takes a bit of an unpredictable approach when addressing, and you yourself say that a lot of the things he says are extremist. So how do you think that, that overall energy affects the RNC in terms of party unity, right? So I know that a big focus we had at the DNC was talking about how we can collaborate on all of our different agendas and how we can find a bit of party unity. That was very important. And it seems that like Trump takes a very extremist approach and that people are being very agreeable. Do you think that has contributed with party unity, or do you think that it has excluded the minority that doesn't agree with what he has to do, and that's why we're seeing more agreeability?
Well, in this case, I think that when you look at the thing, you have to take in not what he says, but what he does. I think that Elon Musk and others have said that. In this instance, I believe that especially when you look at the core members of the RNC and the core party activists and even the grassroots folks, we're all kind of used to this at this point. And we're not, a lot of this, right, is about the media that people consume. And so the media that you both consume, you get a lot more, like on Trump's worst day and his best day, you're a lot more fired up to the negative than I am. Or for that matter, the average American who's not consuming the same media. And so I think in this instance, Republicans, RNC members, the grassroots are more or less used to kind of this, used to kind of the way in which he operates. And we're not looking at MSNBC. I do watch CNN from, little bit, but I'm not watching it around the clock to get myself fired up. And I think that's part of it in this day and age. People on both sides listen to a lot of podcasts, that are telling them to think in one way. I think that kind of contributes to kind of the overall view of what might be, what's going on. But I'd say that the core, the RNC members, grassroots, and I'd say, probably state party members generally are generally going to be on board in this case.
Well, let me ask you. It seems, Patrick, I mean, that the qualification now for government seems to be that you're a Fox News host. I mean, he's appointed some of the worst people that have ever been appointed in government, has he not? Is not Mr. Kennedy the wrong choice for to lead our health? Is not the woman you were on the board of education, Patrick? How do you feel about the woman who's in charge of the Wide World Federation of Wrestling being in charge of the education department? What do you think of
So,
that? She has no experience whatsoever.
well, actually, she served on the Connecticut State Board of Education, which is the would it be the equivalent of the DC State Board of Education. So she does have some experience. I do not know how many years she served, but she did serve on the Connecticut State Board of Education. And I would say that the Department of Education is unique because you both know that in the United States, I mean, look, the Department of Education is unique in that, we're not like other countries where all education comes from the top, or not all other countries, but most of the countries where education is a much more federal initiative. In the United States, we have 13, I think it's over 13,000 governing school boards in the United States of America, and that's not school board members, but that's the entities that govern education in America. And so education in America is awfully fractured, much more state and local. And so I'd say, and for her purposes, she's rather qualified because she's been part of running a business, and she has served on a state board of education.
Well, I would just add to that again before I let Liberty speak again. But I wrote a paper when I was in graduate school on world peace, but that doesn't qualify me to be Secretary of State. Liberty, go ahead. Got anything to say?
Yeah, I do. I think you bring up a really important point, but do you really believe that credentials correlate with capability? Patrick, like you yourself, you've been on the DC State Board of Education and you've run your own business and both very respectable roles. But when we're talking about supporting someone like Donald Trump in presidency, can you explain how those experiences can translate in the ability to judge the National School Board of Education and what very different groups of individuals from every different state will be able to have their voice represented by someone who has had credentials but not real experience working with the people?
Well, and I was just to add to that. Isn't it important to have a national focus on education to bring all these to coordinate all these 1,300, 13,000 boards, whatever?
13,000.
Don't you need somebody? Yeah, don't you need somebody at a national level that's trying to coordinate all this stuff? Or do you see the department as somebody that really has a background in education? Do you see the Department of Education as a waste?
I don't see it as a total waste, but I definitely see it as, kind of the issue here is most of the power in education is at the state and local level.
Yeah.
And having served on the DC State Board of Education, I'm definitely for that. In the case of Secretary McMahon, Secretary Linda McMahon, she had, like I said, she did serve on the Connecticut State Board of Education, and she had previously served as SBA administrator. So, she is, as compared to other, could she have been a superintendent or something like that? Maybe, but she's, when you look at these secretary roles, what is qualified? Pete Buttigieg is a good example, right? He was, sure, he was mayor of a smaller city, but then he became Secretary of Transportation. And so I think, as with Joe Biden, as with all the presidents before, you're going to have, when you're from the other party, you're going to see little things that, gee, why was that a person appointed to that, right? And so
Yeah.
some of these appointments are political. I mean, you could look at, you mentioned RFK Jr., but like look at RFK, right? He was appointed Attorney General of the United States, right? And so now it's a little while ago, obviously, but how qualified was he? And he wasn't, he ended up doing as far as I know, an okay job, and stayed in through at least part of Johnson. But I think we're gonna we're going to see, we're going to have these, in any cabinet, you're going to have little hiccups. But in the case of Linda McMahon, that's probably not where it would be, just because she is, she had run SBA before, I think for almost all 4 years, and she had served on the State Board of Education herself, so.
Well, I mean, we could talk about this all day, but you've also got JD Vance out there. The guy's already screwed up a half a dozen times. People aren't concerned about that in the Republican Party. He's not going to make it to the end of the Trump administration. That's my prediction. He will not be secretary. He will not be Secretary of Defense at this time next year. He's like a total incompetent, in my opinion.
Sorry, you said J.D. Vance?
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't mean JD Vance. I mean
Marshall. Oh. Oh,
Headset.
yeah.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Secretary of Defense.
I was confused. I was like, I didn't know he became Secretary of Defense. Look, with any of these positions, you have, various levels of, from administration to administration. And so, I think we have to, let the president, generally speaking, the president should have his or her pick, as long as they're confirmed by the Senate. And so I just don't see an issue with that.
Okay.
And I look, I would say that in any administration, right? I mean, I might, there's someone I might not like in another administration, but as long as the person's confirmed by the United States Senate, so be it.
The guys running the biggest part of the federal government, the biggest agency in the federal government with no experience. But let's talk about racism. Do we see that in a rearing its ugly head in the Republican Party when we're trying to save the South Africans, the poor white South Africans who brutalized black people in South Africa for over 100 years, and now they're whining because the black people aren't being nice to them, and they still own the majority of farmland in South Africa? Doesn't this raise any red flags for Republicans that he's letting these people in the country? And it's obviously as racist an act as we've seen since in the last 10 administrations.
Honestly, I, again, this goes back to kind of like the media consumption. I vaguely followed this story, and that's all I can, that's all I can say on that situation. But I don't think it comes from a place of, I don't think it comes from a place of racism. I think, I think President Trump gets these, gets ideas that, oh, we need to do this for this group of people or that group of people, and so then he just, he does it. It's kind of like, someone mentioned, kind of laid out the case for Greenland in the first term, right? And so that came up, and I know I've just walked into some other things by bringing up Greenland. But and he mentioned that he got that, kind of briefed on that in the first term, and then he kind of sticks to his guns. And so this could be another example of someone just coming to him and telling him about some issue or situation, and then he sticks to his guns on that particular situation. So.
Well, he didn't have any black people in his administration. Go ahead, Tiffany. I mean,
So,
Liberty. I haven't
Patrick,
used the name Tiffany. Go
you
ahead.
bring up a really interesting point. The media, I agree, there's a lot of noise there. There's a lot of words that don't match with his actions. And I think that the media does divide us. And even though we are Democrats, our main goal, really and truly, with this podcast is to create unity. We want the people to feel that they're being equally represented, just like you do, because those are the morals that America was built on. I think that that compassion is what made an America a superpower. And I agree that the noise we see in the media only creates bigger division. However, we're being fed very different stories, the Democrats and the Republicans.
Yes.
But a very big point you have is that his actions are more scoring than his words are. However, to my credibility, he did promise to end endless wars, but he didn't. He said he'd repeal and replace Obamacare, and he did not. He said that he would drain the swamp and he hired lobbyists. You know, he said that he was going to close the border, and he did achieve that. But even during his presidency, illegal crossings went up and down depending on court rulings, you know, not just on executive action. So what's the exact accomplishment that you're pointing to? Because to me, it's a lot of noise that is accrediting actions that weren't really followed through with successfully for all people being represented. Like, to me, I'm missing unilateral representation here in the media, because I feel like there is a large majority of America that, instead of being advocated for, is being advocated against. And I want to know how Trump is accomplishing that morality that really did make America great to begin with.
Yeah, so I'd say a couple of, number one, he did shut down the border, and that really is a thing. I know it's harder for some of us to see who live in the, kind of in D.C. or in the mid-Atlantic states, but that really is a thing. We need a secure border. We need legal immigration. We need a solid pathway for non-citizens to become U.S. citizens, and we should do that, obviously as expeditiously as possible. But that's a I do think that's a pretty big deal, because he did that fairly quickly. We're 5 months in, but I think arguably he did that in like 2 to 3 months in. February had the lowest, just a few weeks after his inauguration, February had like the lowest border crossings in like 50 years or something, something ridiculous like that. But again, I would say that we're only 5 months in. I don't think anyone would disagree if I said that President Trump is not afraid to break a few eggs here and there. And you're gonna continue to see a few broken eggs here and there, kind of achieve his agenda. I think you would also agree that if you look at his first term, this is extremely different from his first term, because he is, taking much more swift action than he did in his first term, and it's much more planned out and much more well thought out. I think some of the credit there is definitely due to go is going to go to Susie Wiles, because she's keeping him on, she's keeping him on track. But again, we're only 5 months in, so that's, I think that's, we're not 3 years in, right? We're not having this conversation 3 years from now. So I think, some of these things are going to take time. With regard to ending wars, I mean, look, he was the only president in, I think it was like 50 years, not to get us into a new conflict in his first term. So this is like, this is like his, unlike any other Republican in my lifetime. Look, he really doesn't like war. He doesn't like conflict, or I should say, he doesn't like military conflict. And I think, I do take him at his word here, in that I think they are working behind the scenes. They're doing diplomacy. They have, Marco Rubio is a highly qualified Secretary of State, and I think they're working all angles when it comes to our overseas conflicts.
So what about his outrageous behavior? You don't think that's affecting? Look, I think this is going to destroy the Republican Party in the long run. He's out there, first of all, as far as his deals from his first term to his second term, he's the, you talk about going down the media rabbit hole, but he's the worst deal maker in American history. There's no doubt about it. The man's been down bankrupt six times. Okay. So he wanted to get rid of the Iranian nuclear deal. Okay. And now he's trying to negotiate another one, a deal with the Iranians, right? And the Iranians have just said, pound sand, beat it, Donald. We don't want to talk to you. So how is he a good negotiator? He's not a good negotiator. He's horrible at it. And I want to know what you think about his outrageous behavior, that he's coming after Bruce Springsteen because Bruce Springsteen said bad things about him. And the probably the stupidest political move I've seen in my lifetime, he started a fight with Taylor Swift. With Taylor Swift, why would you fight with this woman? She has millions of followers, Patrick, and she's just a nice kid making money. So why are you starting a fight with him, with her?
No, and I thought the same thing at the time, but you know what? He won the election. And he
That's
won.
because of the Democrats, Patrick. That's because we suck. You
Well,
know,
I
I
think
mean,
it has something to
that's really the bottom line, is that he got his ass kicked by Joe Biden, and then he turned around and beat us because the Democrats have dropped the ball. They've dropped the ball. I mean, and look, I hope I'm not coming off as being condescending here, because I believe we're in
No, it's
just
fine.
as big a trouble as the Republican Party is. Please understand that. I believe that we're rudderless right now. We don't know where the hell we're going, right? Nobody has an idea of direction. And that's one thing you have to give the Republican Party, right? At least they're directed, and they're seem to be together and moving in one direction, where the Democrats are all over the place. You know, we fight with each other as much as we fight with you. And we'd love to, you know, the people that are aligned with one camp or another fight within inside the Democratic Party as much as they fight with the Republicans, and that's our fault. But don't you think that's going to hurt the Republican Party in the long run when you've got this guy out there constantly lying? Everything that comes out of his mouth, Patrick, is a lie. The United States has never been taken advantage of by any country in the world. If anything, we've done more to take advantage of other countries using third world resources, creating banana republics, things like that. We've done more damage to the world than the world has ever done to us. So how is going down this, you're talking about us listening to NBC, MSNBC, but you're listening to people that are constantly lying.
Arguably, I would say I'd say it's a two-way street on the media. I'd say it's definitely a two-way street on the media, and that's some of the, you go on Facebook and look at like friends who are like over, 40 to 90, and it's like these two different worlds of politics, because someone is watching and reading something that the other person is not. And then these people, generally these are people who've never been involved in politics before,
Right, that's
which
true.
makes it even more kind of
Right.
entertaining to kind of witness this, because it's a big dumpster fire of just misinformation on both sides. But look, I would say that, if we look at the last election, I do listen, I listened to a lot of, during COVID, I really just got into a lot of these business podcasts. So I started listening to for instance, like the All In podcast before it was the All In podcast, where it was over with Jason Calacanis. And look, President Trump went on all these podcasts, right? And when he was on these podcasts, he was to the typical, even someone that doesn't need a, not to like the RNC member who doesn't need a filter, but he was so normal to people who are listening to these podcasts. So look, I say that when it comes to the media generally, I think it is a two-way street here on both the Democrat and the Republican side. And I think it's, we're people who are going to consume, media from a variety of sources. But obviously, I know if I go to MSNBC and then I flip to Fox News, it's two different, or even worse, I go from MSNBC to Newsmax, it's just two different realities completely. And so that's probably part of the problem here generally with American politics right now.
Well, and I'll agree with you that this is a mistake that people make all the time. The Republicans and the Democrats have different agendas, but the people that fuel both parties are basically the same. The tactics are the same. Their attitudes are the same. There's as many good people, I believe, in the Republican Party as there are in the Democratic Party, and vice versa. So you're right about that. I say, we our Achilles heel is that we're sanctimonious in the Republican, in the Democratic Party, right? We want to tell you, we want to tell you how to think, right? Because you really don't want a gun, Patrick. You're just too stupid to realize it, and we're going to explain it to you. And that's what people hate about the Democratic Party, isn't it? Isn't it that we're always like, yeah, you just don't understand. And that's our Achilles heel. But yeah, you're right about that. On both sides are the same. Is Elon Musk a thing of the history, a thing of the past in the Trump administration?
I think he's still gonna kind of be around, but I think for the most part, I mean, we all kind of knew that he was gonna exit stage left at some point. It was just a matter of like whether it was gonna be the way that it seems to be happening now, or it was gonna be this like drama-filled explosion. As the Republican, I think it's very glad it's not the drama-filled explosion. So I think he's gonna be around. And look, to if you look at someone like Elon Musk, there's a guy that if we had gone back 4 years ago, we both be, well, would you want that guy on your team? We would both be like, yeah, I would love to have Elon Musk on my team, right? And so it's kind of a really it's a kind of a unique also unique situation there because you have a guy that has done a bit in business to say the least. And never mind like SpaceX. I think that's a at this point it is a viable business of all things. But I hope he I do hope he stays active and engaged, but obviously look, he is not a politician, so he doesn't always he's on the spectrum. It's not bad to say. He said that to the world on Saturday
Yeah,
Night
he is.
Live, and so he comes off he doesn't always come across as normal, so to speak, which he's the richest man in the world, so he's not normal to begin with. But what I think the thing that complicates thing is this is just not, kind of used to being in this, in this arena, so to speak.
Well, he doesn't come off as normal. I mean, he is pretty normal. I have 11 children by four different women, too. Go ahead, Liberty. What do you have to say? I know who all the baby mamas are, though. Go ahead.
When you read have you read the Isaacson book yet?
No, I haven't.
You basically need to, you almost need to chart out like when they start getting into the families, it's like you need a flow chart. I mean, it's just
Yeah.
crazy. It's like what is going on? There's another
Well,
kid.
at least he can afford to support them all. That you know,
Well, that's exactly it. Well,
I mean, he can't
I
afford
think.
to support them all, and it looks like he's actually doing it.
And so, I mean, look, it's a very unique circumstance because you have an unbelievably wealthy individual who could say, he could be in France and say, like, hey, I want to meet up with child number seven tonight for coffee, fly him over, so it's just not a, it's a very different reality than normal people have.
It's a different reality. Liberty, do you have something to say? As a person who knows who both her parents are, do you have something to add?
Well, I have to say that you got me there on the Elon Musk talk. That's something that I will never understand. I think really it shows us the importance of media. I think my generation, I come from younger, and that's why it's interesting that we have these talks because I see that even though we're talking about such similar things, my perspective is so different from your guys's. And I must say that, Elon Musk was a joke to me coming into this, which I'm sure we share. The fiction of him having various baby mamas, but also having like a government position that is with leadership globally is
Yeah.
absolutely shocking to me. And honestly, it honestly gives me some pride for it gives me some worship for the Republican branch and how they were able to like achieve, such good approval and such good election participation, especially. And so my question to you, as a Republican who has been very successful in many ways, you and your branch, from your perspective, what are the greatest mistakes and missteps that the Democrats made, especially when trying to engage conservative and moderate voters? Because, even someone as radical as Trump, we had a lot of people who never vote, and we had a large voter turnout for him. How can we, not that you want to help the other side, but how can we get that? What do you think are the greatest mistakes the Democrats made, in your Republican eyes?
Well, step one would have been to have a regular primary process.
Love
And
it.
I think this, not to bring it back to media, but we were getting our, and I'm dating myself a little bit here, even though I wasn't even old enough to remember it, even though I was alive. But Gerald Ford tripping down the airplane, kind of that scene, and Gerald Ford tripping all the time, and then Chevy Chase made it a thing on Saturday Night Live. I actually have to go back and look at this because I was too young. I was like a baby at the time. But if you looked at, like, say, Fox News and conservative, online media and Newsmax, they were basically showing Biden gaffes on a daily basis. So when there was that first debate between President Trump and Joe Biden, there was a little, it was more kind of entertaining, but it wasn't surprising to a Republican because we had been exposed to just a heck of a lot of gaffes. So I would say that, if there's one thing that any American who's voting could do is to kind of consume a little bit more than just one source of media. The biggest thing the Democratic Party could have done would have been to have a, probably as President Biden had said when he was coming in, that he would only serve one term and to have a regular primary. And had they done that, maybe Trump still would have won, but it would have been a completely different playing field.
Well, I agree with that, but you know how hard it is, Patrick, when you have somebody that's the leader of your party, right? He really had to come to terms with that. That was, but I agree with you that they should have done that. But let me also add, as the only one on the podcast that's old enough maybe to remember this, but Ronald Reagan had full blown dementia while he was in the White House. At the very end of his term, reporters were asking him questions, and Nancy Reagan was answering them. There are press conferences where they say, "Mr. President, what's the blah, 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 blah," and Nancy Reagan gives the answer. So I think it's disingenuous for the Republicans to stand up there and take this out on Joe Biden. I mean, the Democratic Party, yes, the Democratic Party should have been responsible, but the Republicans had nothing to say about Ronald Reagan.
I'm not. Look, I'm not. The Democratic Party is about to take it out on Joe Biden in a big
Yeah,
way in the next
no,
couple of
I just
years.
wanted to I just
Look, I'm
wanted to
not taking
clarify
out
that.
Joe Biden. I'm just saying he should have probably stepped aside.
Yeah, she should have.
The debate
It's very
performance.
hard, but you're right. You should have come to the table
Yeah.
earlier. Let me ask you, who's going to take Donald Trump's place, assuming, even though he disregards the Constitution and says he really doesn't know whether he should give a damn about the Constitution or not after taking an oath to protect it? Who's going to replace him? Because he's not going to run for a third term. Is it going to be
Yeah,
Rubio,
so
J.D. Vance? He's talking about his son, Don Jr., dumbest man in the Republican Party. Is it
here's
not?
what I think this could really be a complicated situation,
Yeah.
as we, as we look to 2028. I gotta start remembering to say 2028. We know we said 2024 for so long, but 2028 is, oddly enough, it's around the corner, and obviously he cannot run again. There would be plenty of, he likes to say these things that fires the
Right,
media
okay.
up, and It literally, like, the media just follows that for days and days and days. So they miss, like, other things, you know. So it's just like he, like, trolls the media on these things that he says. So that's something that really only Donald Trump has been able to get away with. I've never, you know, no other president's been able to quite do it like this. But, you know, you're going to have J.D. Vance. You're going to have probably Rubio. You could even have, say, like a Glenn Youngkin, you know, because he won't, you know, he'll be out of the Virginia governorship, and he would be able to, you know, he's got a fundraising base now, as does Rubio, as does Vance. And, you know, frankly, though, with Youngkin, he would be able to start campaigning, you know, as soon as he gets out of the governor's office. Maybe, you know, if you look at the three of them, maybe one of them, I guess it could be Vance, would try and run for vice president. But I'd say that in my eyes, those are probably the big three people who could run right now. You know, other than that, you know, you could have, you know, because if you go back to 2016, I would have told you about Jeb Bush and some other people. So who knows? But I'd say kind of the complicated situation with kind of the MAGA movement, so to speak, is that really it's Donald Trump's brand. And as we saw, I'll throw out Arizona with, you know, with Kari Lake. I always want to say Ricky Lake, but Kari Lake, you know, she can't, you know, there's people that are going to try to be Donald Trump, but they just can't be Donald Trump. And so I guess that will be kind of an interesting component to see in the 2020 elections. But certainly his endorsement will go a long way. So as you noted, if there's like a dark horse candidate like his son, and he were to get behind them, though I don't know, you know, I don't know what his advisors would be telling him to do, or who his advisors would even be at that point. But I would say before you got to John Jr., I'd say look at those three: Vance, Youngkin, and Rubio.
Well, I got to tell you, there's not one thing I like about Youngkin. But I think he'd make a great candidate. And if the Republican Party asked me, who, you know, I've been a campaigner all my life, who I would put up there, I think Youngkin is a, you know, I'm afraid of Youngkin. I think he's a really good candidate. And he won in a state which goes both ways, right? It's a lot like Maryland.
Yeah.
Sometimes they elect Democrats, sometimes they elect Republicans. And that's always a tough state to win in. And he's won there.
Yeah.
I don't know what his popularity is in Virginia. I know that my wife is a Virginia teacher, and she's got a picture of him on the dartboard. But other than that, I really don't know how people feel about him. But I think he's a really good candidate, and I shouldn't be giving you advice, but that's my advice.
But again, as you know, from a Democrat primary or a Republican primary, right? The person that eventually comes in, you know, it's like making sausage. This person has to come out of a primary, which,
yeah, well,
you know, is a lot of, it's pretty, a pretty complicated situation. And so, and that's what makes these presidential elections so interesting, is that we typically don't know who's going to come out of the primary. And in 28, you know, obviously the Democratic primary will be extremely exciting because there's really no leader of the party at the moment. And then the Republican Party, since President Trump cannot run again, that will also be interesting. So it'll certainly be an interesting media political event.
It certainly is interesting. And you know what? That's an old Chinese curse, Patrick. May you be born into interesting times.
Yeah.
Liberty, I'm going to ask you, give you a chance to ask the last question, because we're almost out of time. And let me commend you, Patrick Mayer, for having the bravery to come on and face two liberals. I know that's not easy. And I know you're a great guy. I know you personally, and I like you very much. So I want to thank you. Before I let Liberty ask the final.
Anytime.
Yeah, thank you. Go ahead, Liberty.
Thank you again, Patrick, so much for coming on. This was such an insightful conversation to me. And my question to you is, moving forward, what do you hope to expect? You talked about some resolutions moving forward, especially at the summer meetings, the RNC summer meeting, I believe. What resolutions do you see coming out of that as curious Democrats?
Yeah, so it's unlike it, when you look at the Republican National Committee, it's when the when you're the party, when you have the presidency, all your stuff, most of your stuff is approved through the White House. And so most of the resolutions that would come through would be generic, would likely be generic trade, national security resolutions. At our meetings, our previous meetings before we had the presidency, I got a lot of heartburn at times because, some folks at the RNC might take a very extreme position, but that position would get batted down by the White House in this current environment. So probably most of the resolutions would kind of be on the topics of the border, the economy, taxes, national security, probably China, but the language would probably be pre-approved by the White House.
Well, again,
Interesting.
Patrick Mara, thank you so much for being on the show. We'll have you back again as things develop and become
Great.
even more interesting. We leave every show we play it out with a song, and this always goes to dedicate it to our guest. Here's one for you, Patrick, from one of my favorite songwriters, Randy Newman. Here's Mr. President, Have Pity on the Working Man. We'll see you next week. Thanks.
Standing in the shadows of life.